Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. I didn't do that. From the man who brought you I Did That. You remember the Biden stickers on gas pumps? Now we're going to find out who's first to market with the I Didn't Do That stickers. He didn't do that? What are you talking about? He did not declare Easter Sunday Trans Day of Visibility. I didn't do that, Biden said when asked about proclaiming Easter Sunday Trans Day of Visibility. Asked about Speaker Johnson's claim otherwise, the president replied, quote, he's thoroughly uninformed. He didn't do that. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 64636DA, turnkey.pro text line.
Interesting. Yeah, I saw that denial. Like, I didn't do it. It was just on the calendar. They just happened to fall on the same date, Dan. But since it was man-made and created, you can move it. No one says, like, nothing's, set in tablets, set in stone. If the day falls on the holiest day of the Christian calendar, then move it. It's the right thing to do.
Yeah, that's what the Christian political pacifist would say. Move it.
Well, don't have it at all, but obviously, if it's, I mean...
Two things to that. We can't win
with this president, so we have to do something.
Well, you're right. We should recognize what's happened.
Yeah.
Two things. One, yeah, this is right. This is their spin. This is the spin from the damage control room over at the White House. From, professional prevaricators like KJP, White House spokeshuman.
A lot of misinformation done on purpose. And as a Christian who celebrates Easter with family, President Biden stands for bringing people together and upholding the dignity and freedoms of every American. Now, sadly, and it's not surprising, right? It is actually unsurprising that politicians are seeking to divide and weaken our country with cruel, hateful, and dishonest rhetoric. It is dishonest what we have heard the past 24 hours. It is untrue what we heard over the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
What's untrue? What's dishonest?
That he did that. He didn't do that. So it happened in 2009, so that would be the first term of Joe Obama. That's when it started. By the way, so you might want to take notice. How many people were disturbed about it in 2009? I remember I was. But I was a social conservative fascist back then. I hadn't gotten with the program. I didn't treat it like it should have been treated, like it was treated by most Christians. That's just a kitschy day of recognition. No big deal. Is it a big deal 15 years later? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 64636DA, turnkey.pro text line. Who would have thunk it? 15 years ago, the Joe Obama administration formally issued a proclamation of war against cultural, war on the culture and against Christians. And most just didn't take notice. Mm-mm. It's very generous of you. And to those who say, well, he could have moved it as the response to the, hey, this was something that's just pro forma at this point. Of course it's pro forma. Just move it. A couple problems. One, there's already 144 dates that are taken up by LGBTQIA2S plus 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 recognition days. So that's number one. So it's just tough to fit it in.
Right.
With all those other days.
And you can't do it in June because that's already taken collectively as the month, yes.
And I'm sure Jesus won't mind sharing a platform on Easter Sunday with RuPaul. Right. and then the second thing is, do you not understand the relationship? You defer. This is not reciprocal. You are owed no consideration. I'm going to accommodate some hateful, bigoted, transphobic Christian nationalists? I don't think so. Move it. Who the hell do you think you're talking to? Who the hell do you think you are?
I thought it was God's work that it landed on the same day. I said, see, now people are realizing, because it has been around for years, and people, they ignore it. Like, oh, yeah, it's just, you know, it's just the month of June. And then now it's not just the month of June. Like, the day that it fell on the same day as Easter, I'm like, now people are going to wake up. Now Christians who've been kind of, you know, on the fence or sleeping at the wheel or denying what's going on, they can't deny it because it's in their face, people. It's right there.
No, they won't.
It woke a few up, I think.
It's unfortunate. Anyway, I got to get over to Drag Queen Story Hour at the parish. I got to recite the Sparkle Creed at my Lutheran church in Minnesota. No. Because most of these churches have and denominations have been co-opted, too.
That's true.
Because 15 years ago, and well before then, frankly. Yeah. And then came the redefinition of marriage. And then came the redefinition of biological sex. Well, the redefinition of gender identity, redefinition of biological sex. Yeah. And now we're to the point of, I don't know, the redefinition of child predation.
Yeah. Minor attracted persons. That's going to be legalized soon, too. And prostitution, because you mentioned last week about the, you know, legalizing prostitution. Didn't they have at Maggiano's at the City Press Club? They had people, a state senator, speak about legalizing that.
Brian, St. John, Indiana.
Amy, it is not just June. June is Pride Month. October is LGBTQ History Month. And November 13th through 19th is Trans Awareness Week. Every year, they get 9 weeks a year.
Oh, it's more than that.
Oh, it's
144 days. I've got the list.
144. Okay.
145. No, I'm sorry. 145, including Trans Day of Visibility. Yeah, 145.
Right. So my point is, it's not just June.
No, we have. We have about 100 days to go to knock out every day, making sure that we're always thinking about this. It's front and center.
Yeah. Amen. Thank you, sir.
Thanks for the call, Brian. Amen to the state. That's who we worship. Miguel Cardona, the Secretary of Education, he was one of those.
Mimbo.
Who had an important message for the kids. You know, the kids in high schools and grade schools. Grade schools specifically. They like to get them young.
To the many transgender students across the country listening on this Trans Day of Visibility, we in the Biden-Harris administration want you to know that we see you. We support you. And we celebrate you. We also know it's not an easy time to be you. Walking into a classroom should be an act of hope, not an act of bravery. That every day you choose to show up as your true self, you make this world a more brave, more honest, and more free place. In your gift for seeing things as they could be, I see the promise of America. Today, we at the Department of Education want you to know that your school, your community, and your country are better because you're a part of it. You don't just belong here. We need you here. From all of us here at the Department of Education, happy Trans Day of Visibility.
Rachel Levine is the hope for America's future. He's the embodiment of it. You know, it's a race. It's a race to see who is the most tolerant. Who is the most open-minded? Who is the greatest ally? That's what we should be focused on. Well. And you Christians, look, as Miguel Cardona says implicitly, we don't see you. And we don't want to see you, and we don't want to hear from you, most importantly. So just keep your spiteful views to yourself. You fold in or you get rolled over. And so most fold in and have.
Well, and they keep catering to this notion that all boys are going to be transing over to women. I mean, District 21, Wheeling, over spring break, because they went back to school yesterday, and they thought it was an April Fool's joke. It wasn't. Those are really tampon dispensers in the boys' bathrooms.
What's and parents, law?
Well, parents were complaining like the boys' tampons are free and the girls are 25 cents. Boys aren't even using tampons anyway. But yes, it is a law.
Oh, boys aren't using tampons anymore?
Yeah,
this just in. Boys don't use tampons.
No, they never have. But they're middle, elementary and middle schools.
A state law. Oh, something else that slipped by the goalie. Nobody knows it's a state law because it's not a big deal. What's the big deal? You know, boys don't have to take the tampons if they don't want them in the boys' room. What's the big deal? And if girls have to pay for them and boys hand, oh, that's easy to solve. Just to have a girl choose to go to the boys' room. Why are there boys' and girls' rooms? Because gender is a social construct. It's invented. So why isn't there, why do we have these anachronisms in our schools? Boys' and girls' rooms? What's a boy? What's a girl? No one knows. So go wherever you want. Go in the hallway. I don't care. Who cares? What's the big deal? What's the big deal? What's the big deal? What's the big deal? I've heard that for the last 15 years. There's no big deal. Let's press the pedal down and get to full depravity faster.
Well, put urinals then in the girls' washrooms. I mean, let's go if we're going to do it.
What is this girls' washroom
you speak of? That's right, yeah.
Let me give you an example of somebody who is winning. Somebody who is conceiving of this properly. Somebody that you should emulate and your kids should as well. Wayne Brady. Wayne Brady knows what winning looks like in 2024 America. You know Wayne Brady, the comedian and host of Let's Make a Deal, the latest iteration of it and so forth. Whose line is it anyway? He's on all the time.
People think that you're an indecisive bisexual. It's like, no. Let me set you straight. What the definition basically boils down to is regardless of gender. Regardless. So that means that I am happily free to fall in love with anybody here. If you're gay, if you're straight, if you're non-binary, trans, I don't care. It's the person, which in my mind is the ultimate in acceptance and loving. So I win.
Wayne Brady, pansexual, declares victory. And he's right too. He did win. Pansexual, Wayne Brady. I win. Right. He knows how the game is played. Are you starting to get it? People out there listening, you starting to get how the game is played? Is it penetrating? Pun intended? Yet? It's been 15 years. It's been a lot longer than that. But 15 years since they formalized it with a proclamation. Bob, Buffalo Grove.
Good morning, Dan and Amy, and welcome back. Hope you had a good time off, Amy.
Trans Day of Visibility.
Here's something I posted on several websites, comments. Never did I think I'd be living in the Twilight Zone, moving on to the outer limits and going one step beyond. I mean, the insanity that's going on right now is just bizarre. Have a good week of shows, and talk to you soon. Have a great day.
And Bob, your tax dollars are paying for those tampons in the elementary schools in your neighborhood.
Didn't we do a state thing where we removed the sales tax on tampons, or was that temporary? I don't know. I don't buy tampons.
Yes.
I'm not in grade school anymore, so yeah.
I mean, they're going to just use those to stuff up the toilets and the sinks and use them as rocket ships. It's going to be great. And I heard the boys from people, parents who have kids that go to school there, they thought it was an April Fool's joke at first. And then they said, "Why we don't use tampons and we don't want them in our bathroom."
Well, it's easily solved. They just, they're ignorant.
Tear it down.
Have Dylan Mulvaney come in for a student assembly and show boys how to use the tampons. That's all.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
Your show keeps me alive during the week. There's nobody I'd rather listen to between 5 and 9 in the morning than you guys.
On AM 560, The Answer.
Business owners, now's the time for your business to make the move to a locally owned business bank. Hi, Mike Gallagher here to let you know that you don't have to look far. Signature Bank was founded in Chicago with a simple mission: to help companies like yours grow, succeed, and thrive. Their decisions are made locally by a terrific team that knows your name, cares about your business, and invests in your success. That's why Signature Bank is my bank. I'm a customer. As business owners, they knew that local family-owned businesses were not getting the help they needed or deserved. So, I invite you to reach out to my friends at Signature Bank today. Write the number down. Remember this phone number, Signature Bank, 773-467-5630. And learn all about this great bank, 773-467-5630. Or visit them online at signaturebank.bank. That's signaturebank.bank. Signature Bank makes commercial banking personal. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Only the biggest stories, only the biggest guests, and only the biggest opinions. This is AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy, as we discussed yesterday, the victory of in the Marxist primary for Cook County State's Attorney of Eileen O'Neill O'Malley, O'Shea Madigan O'Connor, Walsh Boyle, Kelly Byrne, Cullerton Burke. She won by just under 1,500 votes over Clayton Harris. I tell you, I was worried, but I'm not worried anymore. And you shouldn't be either.
Why not?
Because you do not have to worry about her being tough on crime. She said so herself. I think there's a lot of concern. A lot of the concern was unfair that I was going to be very hard on crime. Don't have to worry about that. I want to be effective. That doesn't mean we're going to lock everybody up. We're going to getting people turned around is how she's going to measure her effectiveness. Not how many people we lock up, but how many people we get turned around. And we'll work very, very hard throughout this next campaign to make sure every single community in Cook County understands what my positions are. Wonderful. Wonderful. Good. Whew. I was worried that something was going to change, and I know some of you were worried about that too. And rest assured, stay the course, 1,000 points of light. Wouldn't be prudent at this juncture to make a course correction. And you've heard that right from the mouth of Eileen O'Neill O'Malley, O'Shea Madigan O'Connor, Walsh Boyle, Kelly Byrne, Cullerton Burke.
Stop it.
Whew.
Yeah, she gave her victory speech yesterday, and
that's relief.
Ooh, yeah.
Well,
312-642-5600,
turnkey.proanswerline, 64636DA, turnkey.pro text line.
Right after, you know, she declared victory after she got the concession call from Clayton Harris III, who really nobody knew who he was. He barely campaigned. She accepted a thank you from Tony Preckwinkle, saying, you know, I look forward to working with you. I'm like, why are you letting the fox in the hen house? Be your own Democrat, but it's too late. It's over. They're all in bed together.
This in New York, I love this, too, because it's sort of the same attitude you have in Chicago. Some council human, New York City Council, the Women's Caucus in New York City, deeply disturbed, concerned about widespread reports of attacks against women in New York City that have been confirmed by the NYPD. Yeah, right. It turns out in New York, there's been a rash of women getting randomly punched in the face as they're walking down the street or in the subway.
Yeah, we've been seeing that on social media, you idiots, for a year. Right. They're just that group of ladies. They're very hot, by the way. Good lookers. Whew. They're just tuning in on that.
Council human Amanda Farias, where are the men calling this out? Oh, it's men's fault now. Oh, you're interested in alpha males, are you, all of a sudden? Council human. You mean like Daniel Penny?
Ooh, nice.
Yeah, all of a sudden, we're so interested in men speaking up. Where are the men as the protectors? I mean, that's what she's really saying. Tweeting about it doesn't really do a whole lot. I don't think a lot of these repeat violent offenders are so fragile that a mean tweet is going to deter them. But you go ahead with that, Council Human. This is what you're dealing with, and this is what you'll be seeing in Chicago, too. I mean, a continuation of it. It's not like it's new. It's just a continuation that's guaranteed. But don't worry, because you'll have the same rap here that you've currently enjoyed. Again, nothing. Do not worry. Nothing is going to change. It's going to be fine, everybody. I don't care what tribe you're a member of. Everything is fine. Nothing changes. So Eileen O'Neill, O'Malley, O'Shea, Madigan, O'Connor, Walsh, Boyle, Kelly, Byrne, Cullerton, Burke will be saying the same thing you're hearing from like Muriel Bowser in Washington, D.C. The same thing you heard from Kathy Hochul over the weekend in response to the eulogy that was offered by the widow of Jonathan Diller, the NYPD officer who was murdered in the line of duty, talking about 2 years ago, we had two other cops murdered in the line of duty. We called for change then. We're calling for change now. When's change going to come? And Kathy Hochul, the governor there, who was asked to leave the funeral service, said, we're doing good. The crime is down. People have a right to be upset, but we're on the job providing public safety. Crime is down. It's all working. We know what to do when we're doing it. And that's the same thing that's going on in Washington, D.C. Here's Muriel Bowser, the mayor of D.C., speaking with Joe Kernan on CNBC.
My daughter's there, and I'm a nervous person already. So she's in her, in her 20s. I already worry. She worries. She's scared. She doesn't feel safe. She had a place broken into, and someone got shot on her block. And she wanted me to just ask you, what's the answer? Do you have a plan? Is it broken windows that you got to do more of that, or is it more funding for police? What's the plan? Should she feel safe in D.C., Mayor Bowser?
Absolutely. And this is what you should know. I just got an update from my deputy mayor, and crime is down in all categories in Washington, D.C., especially those categories that so troubled us last year with robbery and carjacking, down more than 30%. So we've done the things that we know will reset our public safety ecosystems.
Why didn't you do them last year then, if you know what to do? I mean, Washington, D.C. was the really only major metropolitan area that saw double-digit spikes in all violent crime, including murders last year, even as crime receded a little bit, still well above 2019 percentages, which that context is often left out. But why don't you do that? I just got a report from last week and crime is down. We're doing what needs to be done. Everything is going well. The same rap you hear from BLM Brandon, our Brandon here, BLM Brandon Scott in Baltimore. Pick a major metropolitan area with more than 300,000 people, any which one, and you'll get the same rap from their Soros-funded prosecutor and their identitarian new Marxist mayor. Same deal. And you'll get the same thing from this Eileen O'Neill, O'Malley, O'Shea, Madigan, O'Connor, Walsh, Boyle, Kelly, Byrne, Cullerton, Burke, too.
312-642-5600. Turnkey.pro answer line. You could also reach us on our text line. 64636. Type in DA, then a quick comment. I mean, D.C. was so bad last year that even Biden's granddaughter's security detail was almost carjacked. Remember that?
Yeah.
Everything's locked up. I have a friend there. She can't leave her stroller. People run up and steal stuff from her stroller if it's not by her side for a second.
Are you ready for something next level?
I'm ready. I'm sitting down, Dan.
San Francisco. This is a response. And again, it could and probably will at some point in the not too distant future be the CTA, be the L. They'll be passing these out at L platforms.
Oh my God, what?
This is outstanding.
Oh boy.
We literally have lost our ability in major metropolitan areas in this country. We have lost the ability to protect ourselves. We're not even trying. We are completely defenseless. Self-inflicted defenselessness. It's the most incredible thing to witness, but it explains the election results over the last several cycles that it was difficult to understand. You don't care about your home value. You don't care about your kids' schools, but you say you do, but you don't. You don't act like you do. It finally hit me. It's just learned helplessness. Learned helplessness is the order of the day, particularly in metropolitan areas dominated by the new Marxists. They've won. They've fully lobotomized the majority of the electorate, such they cannot even bring themselves to take any steps to protect themselves or their families. Where are the men speaking up? There are no men in these metropolitan areas. I mean, not in the majority. There are some in the minority that don't have any political power, but not in the majority. There are no men. No ability to protect oneself. The Bay Area Rapid Transit.
Oh, God.
And San Fran.
What?
Is providing bystander intervention cards.
What in the world is that?
Cards for when you're being attacked at the train station that you can share with a bystander or potentially a perpetrator that indicate that you would like some help. Or a bystander can give you a card. I see you're about to be murdered. Would you like some help? Or you can give a card to the perpetrator that says, I don't appreciate you attempting to murder me. Please stop. It's not quite that, but it's basically that. Listen to these two.
Okay.
And they're
wait.
Probably college educated. Two young women doing essentially a PSA for these things.
Okay.
And then the actual Bay Area Rapid Transit governmental PSA that's posted on their website. First, the two girls.
Okay.
Hello, excuse me, will we be able to have some bystander intervention cards, please?
Yeah, sure, hang on.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
So, this card over here is for when you're being harassed. It says, you got me? So, you'd hand it to somebody else, and it gives them instructions on how they can help you.
If you see someone being harassed, you can also give them this I got you card, which gives them instructions on the back to find the BART police or call someone or more instructions on how to be safe.
I really appreciate these cards because they gave me a concrete way to deal with an unsafe situation. I'm not very equipped to deal with them on my own, and so these cards give me a sense of community and a sense of support.
Especially for young college students and for youth, I think these cards are really accessible. It just gives a very easy way to either help someone or to ask for help without having to do much. If everyone has one, then we'll just be able to support each other so much better and feel safer.
Could you please stop beating me with a hammer? I'm trying to read this card and decide whether I want some bystander intervention or not.
Oh, my God. Don't harass me cards? Hopefully they'll have time enough to whip it out. Oh, wait, but before you hit me on the head with that pipe, here is my card. Oh.
Now we can come to the...
You're giving cards to hand to assailants. This is not making any sense.
And also bystanders and victims
right.
While they're being assailed.
Oh, I can't wait to see the government's take on this because that was, you know, a feel-good, like, with a nice theme music behind. Like, everything's well. Everything's all well and swell here in San Francisco.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, there is a caveat that the girls left out, and that's why you have the government to
okay.
make sure that, you know, every detail is included. You know, they've run the traps. These are the people who know what they're doing, okay? So sometimes there's a little gap in implementation between the experts, the Bay Area Rapid Transit, and then just the, you know, the pedestrians, the rabble that uses the trains. So this is where you have the government come in and offer their own PSA to make sure you have a holistic understanding of the program.
On BART, we look out for each other. Intervene if you see sexual harassment. It is more common than you think. Sexual harassment is any unwelcome sexual conduct. It could be invasion of personal space, inappropriate touching, grinding, groping, exposure of genitals, sexual advances, and public masturbation. Bystander intervention is a common tactic used to help prevent or interrupt harassment or violence. The bystander intervention approach is about centering the person impacted, their feelings, their needs, and their experience. We want to equip you with the knowledge, skills, and tools needed to effectively and safely help prevent sexual violence. Bystander intervention includes four steps. Number one, assess the situation. Does the harasser have a weapon? If yes, stop. Call BART Police at 510 464-7000.
Can I have that number again, please?
Ask another bystander for support. You can say something like, "Hi, my name is Halima, and I see what's happening. I think it's wrong. Can you help me by taking a video or a picture or by calling the bar operator using the intercom at the end of the car?" Number three, approach the targeted person and ignore the attacker. Make sure that they know you're here to help. You can say something like, "Hi, my name is Halima, and I'm here to help you." Make sure to ask for their consent and permission. You can say something like, "Can I sit with you or stand next to you?" Number four, offer assistance. Offer options to the targeted person for how you can support them. You can offer things like, "We can move to another car if you'd like," or "We can get off at the next station and I can wait with you." Or, "If you'd like to report this to BART Police, I'm happy to support you and be a witness in the report." Respect the person's wishes if they say no and they are okay. Now, I want to make this very clear. This method is not advisable if the harasser has a weapon of any kind.
Oh my God, I mean...
I swear to God.
Is this an April Fool's joke?
Just it is not the Babylon Bee. It is not a Phil Hendry bit. That is right from the Bay Area Rapid Transit website. So,
excuse me.
That man who's masturbating on you, is that upsetting you? I want to get your verbal permission to assist you.
Now, do you want me to videotape it in case?
What are your feelings about this guy that looks to be unhoused grinding on you or your adolescent daughter? Is that something that is making you uncomfortable? Here's a card. If you could, check the box which indicates your feelings on the matter. I'm here to intervene. I'm not paying attention to you, attacker. You're just going to have to wait your turn. It really is just
clown world.
It's so beyond that. The words do not come easily, but it really is learned helplessness. Please victimize me. I mean, you are just saying to predators, no resistance.
Yeah, keep going.
There will be no resistance. Because I understand you're a victim, too. Let's be victims together. Bob in Waukegan.
Yeah, they should just pass out T-shirts or sweatshirts, depending on what the weather's like. Every time you buy a ticket to get on the tram there or whatever, just say, "Yeah, I accept help," or "I don't accept help" on your sweatshirt. And that's the only thing you can wear while you're riding on it the entire time. Mm-hmm. So that you don't have to carry the little card and ask anybody. Just carry print it on the back of a sweatshirt so somebody behind you can, read the whole thing and help you out.
And then ignore you. Exactly. T-shirt ideas. Please put your penis away.
Yeah. That offends me.
Yeah, just sort of to set a baseline for your commute. Quickly, Monica and Lyle.
Hi. I was just going to say, before I got on the phone with you guys, I told my husband, why does this remind me of the society in Demolition Man? Politely go up to criminals and say this and this and this. And another thing with the term newcomers, somebody must have watched the movie Alien Nation or saw the TV show, because that's what they were called, newcomers. The aliens in the TV show and film.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good call. Thanks for the call, Monica. Yeah, a little of foreshadowing of cultural surrender a couple of decades in advance of the actual surrender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
Your show keeps me alive during the week. There's nobody I'd rather listen to between 5 and 9 in the morning than you guys.
On AM 560, The Answer.
Business owners, now's the time for your business to make the move to a locally owned business bank. Hi, Mike Gallagher here to let you know that you don't have to look far. Signature Bank was founded in Chicago with a simple mission: to help companies like yours grow, succeed, and thrive. Their decisions are made locally by a terrific team that knows your name, cares about your business, and invests in your success. That's why Signature Bank is my bank. I'm a customer. As business owners, they knew that local family-owned businesses were not getting the help they needed or deserved. So I invite you to reach out to my friends at Signature Bank today. Write the number down. Remember this phone number, Signature Bank, 773-467-5630. And learn all about this great bank, 773-467-5630. Or visit them online at signaturebank.bank. That's signaturebank.bank. Signature Bank makes commercial banking personal. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. I got this email yesterday from a listener. He poses a question that I'll pose to you all.
All right.
He writes, "Dear Casey." he writes, "Dan, what is behind what appears to be a very intentional silence of one Barack Obama on the border crisis? I'm surprised that both the woke media as well as conservative media hasn't been able to get a peep out of the former president about the intention to flood this country with illegal aliens. Your thoughts?" Question mark. So what would you say to our listener friend who is curious as to why Obama has been able to get away with being silent on this issue, despite appearing recently in a very public setting at Radio City for a big Biden fundraiser? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 646-36-DA, turnkey.pro text line.
It's very curious, because in 2007, Obama on immigration was very, you know, very strong against it. You know, we need secure borders. We have to have a legal and fair immigration process, yada, yada. Everybody thought this whole time he's been running the show for Biden. He still lives in Washington, D.C. Valerie Jarrett, still nearby, lives in the west wing of their house. I don't know why he has been so quiet and silent about it. Maybe because he's the one that's plotting and planning.
Possibly. Well, I mean, I'm surprised the woke media and conservative media hasn't been able to get a peep out of the former president. Well, the D.C. press corps is not going to press him on the issue because
they're not going to stand in front of his house.
Well, they're not even going to ask him about it if they're standing next to him at Radio City, because that may be awkward. It may make him uncomfortable. If he has something to say on a particular topic, we'll wait until he's good and ready to say it. We're not going to press him on anything. We're in his service, so that should be obvious. I mean, the same goes for Biden. You think they're going to compare and contrast things he said in 2007 versus what he is or is not saying today any more than they do so for Biden? You know, it wasn't so long ago, and on conservative media, I mean, that should be fairly obvious, too. No access. And the left doesn't have to answer calls from, you know, the Washington Examiner or the Daily Caller or conservative talk radio, and they're not going to. So it's pretty obvious why there's no pressure on him to have to say anything he doesn't want to say. And, you know, to the extent that he is providing advice and counsel, he would say something very similar to what Biden said during the State of the Union address, where he, you know, you sort of do this pantomime of being serious about border security. You blame Republicans as being obstructionists, and we want to do something in a bipartisan fashion, and it's passed the Senate. We got the Senate, well, it didn't pass the Senate, but we got the Senate on board. This is intransigent MAGA cultists in the House. I mean, the whole rap that you saw and heard during his State of the Union address, that's Obama redux. Same thing he did on pick an issue, any issue, even as he was this great uniter, we're told. By the way, the Trump cultist thing, too, is so funny. David Harsanyi made this salient point in a podcast I did with him over at AmericanGreatness.com, which, you know, the president of a party, the president, you know, it normally dominates the party. A president or a former president dominates the party with which he is affiliated. This is nothing new. And frankly, Trump dominates the Republican Party today, much less than previous presidents of both parties, including the aforesaid Barack Obama, who was treated as the one, like the savior, Messiah.
Yep,
but he treated himself as a Messiah, and so did Democrat Obama cultists for 8 years. So, I mean, please give me a break with this cultist nonsense. It's the cult of personality politics afflicts both sides. I don't like it. But, I mean, it's attendant to both sides, and it's nothing new. People are so ridiculous, MAGA cultists. Anyway, speaking of immigration and going into the Wayback Machine and remembering fights of yore that never particularly went anywhere. I mean, they sidelined a few people, but they never went anywhere in terms of larger public policy that would be in the interests of stewarding America into a positive place in the future. And thus, here we are. Remember this episode? I was just looking at this. We were looking back at Bill Clinton's State of the Union address in 95, talking about illegal immigration and all the things that Schumer and Pelosi have said over the years. Mm-hmm. I mean, just these two, Schumer and Pelosi, they don't get enough of attention. Pelosi and Schumer on illegal immigration, not so long ago.
While we need to address the issue of immigration and the challenge we have of undocumented people in our country, we certainly don't want any more coming in.
Illegal immigration is wrong, plain and simple. Until the American people are convinced that we will stop future flows of illegal immigration, we will make no progress on dealing with the millions of illegal immigrants who are here now and on rationalizing our system of legal immigration. When we use phrases like undocumented workers, we convey a message to the American people that their government is not serious about combating illegal immigration, which the American people overwhelmingly oppose. If you don't think it's illegal, you're not going to say it. I think it is illegal and wrong. People who enter the United States without our permission are illegal aliens, and illegal aliens should not be treated the same as people who entered the U.S. legally.
That's an instant classic of Pagliacci Schumer at Georgetown. We played it before, but boy, it's just fun to remember those bad old days when Pelosi and Schumer were xenophobes. Remember?
Oh, yeah. Now they're such hypocrites. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. You could reach us also on our text line, which is up and running, 64636, type in DA, then a quick comment.
A favorite from the Wayback Machine, too, is this episode that doesn't get talked about nearly as much as some of these speeches. But remember the Clinton years when he had two attorney general nominees in a row, women, get sidelined because they had problems with illegal immigrants working in their homes?
Oh, that's right. Nannies and housekeepers. Yes.
Yeah. Kimball Wood and Zoe Baird.
Yep.
And this was Joe Biden back in 1993, mere 30 years ago when he was in his late 70s. And he...
In his first years in office, yeah.
Not his first year in office.
No, that's right. He's been 50 years in office. Excuse
yeah,
his
79.
Whole life, his whole career is
no, 79, 72, 73, yeah. so anyway, Biden, you know, is Senate Judiciary Committee. And I think it was Senate Jew that took up this matter. But regardless, in the Senate. Mm-hmm. And he had some pointed comments for Clinton's AG nominee at the time. She didn't make it. This just in. Zoe Baird.
The committee and the public, as we've discussed, has to be assured that you are, without exception, going to be willing to enforce the law. And the immigration law falls under your responsibility. It happens on your watch as Attorney General. And I believe it's important you have an opportunity to explain in even greater detail than you have in your opening statement the various circumstances surrounding this hiring.
Wow. Hardliner.
Well, things have changed. It was back when he had brown hair, too, and seemed more sensible than he is now.
Yeah, a lot of reform xenophobes roaming around in the Democrat Socialist Party these days, isn't it? Isn't it interesting? And it's certainly worth noting. So it's the whole wrong then or wrong now. So the Joe Biden, the Bill Clinton, the Pagliacci Schumer, the Pelosi, what would they have said back then to an El Paso or about an El Paso judge who released 220 people that were arrested on riot charges for bum rushing law enforcement at the border in El Paso the other week.
Yeah, he did it on Easter Sunday, actually, which is strange. Yeah. Just let them
Easter
all out.
Sunday.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Well, people in El Paso were pissed.
What would the Nancy Pelosi and the Chuck Schumer and the Bill Clinton and the Barack Obama and the Joe Biden of a few, not even a few in some cases, decades ago, what would they have said? I wonder. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 646-36-DA, turnkey.pro text line. What would they have said of New York spending, Uncle Sam spending more on illegal immigrants than on American military?
Sick.
This is a piece over at Fox News from Bess Blackburn doing the math for us, which is helpful, on what the benefits are in New York for people that are in this country illegally as compared to, say, troops, military men and women from New York who are deployed. She is the editor-in-chief of Political Philosophy at the Liberty Journal. And she notes that illegal migrants are about to be given prepaid debit cards, which we talked about last week. Each person gets about $360 a month, which for a family of four would be about $1,440 per month. Right. An average military family is suffering from a deficit of $1,860 over a period of 9 months, while a similarly sized illegal migrant family is being given nearly seven times more by virtue of illegally occupying the country. It's really something. What would they say? The Military Times: enlisted soldiers receive $452 a month in basic allowance for sustenance. While deployed, those soldiers suffer $399 in monthly meal deductions, even if they don't use base dining halls. The only entitlement for the deployment itself, which offset this deduction, was $195 a month of assignment incentive pay. So the current system results in more than $200 lost each month for a deployed soldier and their family. While soldiers with dependents receive an additional $250 per month in family separation allowance, this does not begin to compensate for the actual additional costs of childcare, for example, for one-parent households. So thus the $1,860 less cumulative during a nine-month deployment than they would have had they not been deployed over the same 9 months, which on its face, that alone doesn't make sense. And then when you layer in a comparison to people in this country illegally, then it just becomes offensive. But what are you going to do? I wonder what the Nancy Pelosi and Pagliacci Schumer and Barack Obama and Joe Biden of a decade or two ago would have said to Boston using veterans housing to house illegal immigrants. I mean, this after we had that episode a couple of months ago where a disabled combat veteran was thrown out of his nursing home to make room for veterans. Mm-hmm. The veterans home at Chelsea, for example, in Boston, will become a safety net site for migrants where beginning May 1st, they will have to prove they are working to wean off government assistance by applying work authorizations, learning English, and searching for permanent residency. Sure they will. Who's going to enforce that? Maura Healey, the governor? Michelle Wu, the mayor? Sure they will. Just like migrants are being evicted in Chicago. Sure they are. They're not going anywhere.
Did you see the five families that were evicted? Or they weren't even evicted. They don't call it an eviction, Dan. They're being rehoused.
Exactly.
They had more stuff than I own. They were filling up their trucks at the Broadway Armory. I'm like, where'd you get that? I mean, like, good for them. Oh, that's a really nice nightstand you got there. And then they moved all their stuff and they... Lord knows where they went, but, you know, it was a photo op.
The point is, right, they're not going anywhere.
They're not.
They are not going anywhere. They are
permanent. Your new neighbors.
They are permanently here, your new Biden buddies.
That we're paying for. Yep.
Nick in Edison Park.
That's it. Nick. Yeah, not only have the Democrats evolved on illegal aliens, but Bruce Jenner is actually a birthing person.
Yes, there's been a lot of evolution over the last couple of decades. Yeah, Man, it's interesting, the parallel. Bruce Jenner from the cover of a Wheaties box to a chick. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, Joe Biden, Barack Obama, Chuck Schumer, Nancy Pelosi. Yeah.
Makes your everybody head spin sometimes, right?
Well, they just, you know, again, they change their costume to fit the time. And also, you know, that sort of presupposes they're captive to events. No, they're part of a movement that has a direction. And so they continue to push, and then they form at the back of the parade once the front of the parade has come together, so that they will continue to be right where they need to be in terms of public opinion. They're driving it. They're driving it. They're moving with it. They're moving. We're moving. We're moving. We're moving. All right. Stop. Pause. Okay. We're moving. We're moving. We're moving. That's what they do. Mm-hmm. And here the right stands around looking up at the stars, completely befuddled that what was in front of them is now 3 miles past them.
Yeah, but while we're sleeping, they're plotting on ways to advance their issues and their policies and take us down.
Tom in Oswego.
Good morning, Dave and Amy. I wish President Trump and all the Republicans would run just incredible amounts of commercials with these sound clips. Just let the American people, the ones who don't know what's going on, just what they thought years ago as compared to today.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's not so many years ago. No, I agree. Well, thank you. I mean, this is, you know, people can decry social media, but it's Zamistad. It's a way to get information out, to share information quickly. So it certainly has its utilities, and that's going to be necessary. By the way, it's not just, you know, here again, outsourcing all of this to the Trump campaign or the Republican Party or candidates for office. Everybody listening has access to social media. So you're free to take what we platform and share it, to look around and find other things that you think are useful or persuasive or important that people should know and share it. So, you know, some people don't have the time or the energy to walk precincts and all that, and some do and they should. But you can still be an information source within your circles of influence. There's just no excuse not to be. Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer.
This is the morning show. More Chicago radio listeners are choosing. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. If you're looking for the latest news, insight into what it means, and the sharpest opinion, there's only one station in Chicago where you can turn, and it's this one. We're AM 560, The Answer.
Sports and politics and sports and politics and sports and politics and intersection. Arrogance and ignorance. Arrogance, ignorance, and arrogance and ignorance. Intersection.
I want to get to LSU coach Kim Mulkey again, since she was the target of this smear job by Jeff Bezos's Amazon Post phony news outlet, according to the standards set by the D.C. Press Corps and the Chicago Press Corps. Phony. Because Jeff Bezos runs it. Jeff Bezos owns it. Mm-hmm. So it's phony. I say it's phony. They say outlets I'm a part of are phony. If you don't like the person who owns it, then you just say they're phony. You don't have to address the substance of the coverage. Actually, we will. They won't. Anyway, I digress. Before we get to that, though, I do have to play this clip from yesterday's White Sox game. Mike Scott's been reporting the White Sox are easing into the season.
Oh, okay. Just a slow roll, Dan?
Yeah, easing
they're
in.
Just warming up.
You got to peek at the right time. So they're the only team in the American League without a win thus far. But again, it's sort of the false sense of security they're creating with respect to their competitors. But this happened during the a game that I think was called because of the slaughter rule yesterday. Oh. And I think that's what a lot of the Sox players and staff thought, which is why they weren't around during the game.
Truist Park. On April 8th. So how about this? We have a delay because there is no first base coach right now for the Chicago White Sox.
What?
Which is quite incredible. Something that usually happens at a Little League game. It's supposed to be Jason Bourgeois, And so apparently he's not down there. They're yelling, anybody can coach first base.
Can Wiley Ballard coach first base?
Dan, get down there.
I didn't know that was
there are
a
no
rule
fans
that you
in
had
the stands,
to have a first
so.
Base coach.
That's not an option.
Get the concessions guy.
I have never. This is a new one. I've never seen
what about
seen
Southpaw?
This.
Where's
so
Southpaw?
Send out
Southpaw.
Somebody.
Ronnie Woo around? Oh, no. He's a
meanwhile, Tyler like, Matzik is waiting to enter the game here in the bottom of the eighth after Dylan Lee pitched.
I don't really know why they need a first base coach. They don't have any base runners.
Hey-o.
So, but I'll tell you, you know, say what you want, but where's a Legee when you need one? You know, they banned the Legee boys from coming to Sox games after their little run-in with an umpire a decade ago or
yeah,
so.
Yeah, just a little. When they stormed the field and ran. I mean, there sure is an accident.
It's a little bit of a run-in. It's nothing that is unusual in Bridgeport. And when you need them, when you want them, they're not around because, well. Anyway, so Sox are firing out of the gate. This is a team that is definitely worthy of $1 billion of your money for a new stadium. Okay. Kim Mulkey and LSU. So I guess LSU lost to Caitlin Clark and the Hawkeyes yesterday.
Yeah. You don't know the score. 94-87. And they were tied at the half, and then Caitlin Clark came back in the third quarter and scored 4 3-pointers. She was brilliant. I just love her.
Scored 4 3-pointers?
Well, total of 9 for the game, but I'm saying in that third quarter. And then they got ahead, and that was
scored
it.
Okay, boom goes the dynamite. It's just such like so awkward way to. It's not how you say it.
Okay, then how would you say it, Dan?
Buried 4 3-pointers. Hit 4 3-pointers.
Stuck 4 3-pointers.
You sound like Rahm Emanuel talking about the Bears. We're very excited that the Bears are 3-0 to start the season.
I am far from Rahm Emanuel. Rahm Emanuel did not play high school basketball. He was a dancer. He was a ballerina.
I'm well aware of his forays into the dance community. Then he went to an all-girls college, Cheryl Lawrence. So this Kim Mulkey, we talked about this yesterday. There's this controversy, you mentioned it, about LSU not being on the court at the beginning of the game for the anthem.
Yeah. Why not?
Well, apparently that's not unusual for LSU. Coach Mulkey explained, I'm not saying this is good form. She may want to consider changing this, but she said it was nothing intentional. Her team has a routine that they go through before the start of a lot of games. And point of fact, when LSU played Iowa for the national championship last year, they were also not on the court for the national anthem, but they're not sending a political message. A local reporter who covers, the LSU sports team said, they're often not on the floor because, like, at 12 minutes before tip, they're, you know, it's part of their routine. Pregame routine. They're back in the locker room doing whatever they are doing to.
That doesn't help their bad boy image, though. I mean, that, like, come on, the world is watching this game. Well, when you have reporters writing articles, sweethearts versus the villains, that's feeds into the bad boy image, in my opinion.
Well, first of all, they're girls.
There are no genders anymore.
They're dirty debutantes, according to. Yeah. Well, that got rescinded. We tackled this yesterday, but that was a smear job. And so, again, I don't think Kim Mulkey cares about feeding into whatever invented narrative the sports press corps, which is to say the D.C. press corps, adjunct in the sports world. I don't think she cares very much. I think she's got the right attitude about it. My sense from just hearing her talk over the weekend about the LA Times column that was based on the Amazon Post story, which I think was a smear job, that she's pretty tough. I think she's very old school.
I love her.
I mentioned yesterday, She seems to me she would fit in the old Big Ten that featured Bobby Knight and Judd Heathcote and Gene Katie. I like the cut of her jib.
Yeah.
And I think so. Yeah, I agree. She should make sure the players on the court for the national anthem but I don't think there's any real controversy there. I don't think she is of that nature, and I don't think her players are. And I thought this was interesting, too. One of the moms that rallied to her defense, in addition to the players who take basically the same attitude as the coach, because she's not trying to be anybody's friend. She's an authority figure, and she's trying to provide some guidance to young women, which is what coaches should do. But this is a mom of a player on LSU who's got a cool name, Flo J. Johnson.
Love her.
F-L-A-U apostrophe J-A-E. I've always wanted an apostrophe in my first name.
Deanne.
Deanne. I could do a Deanne. I could do that. Daniel. Deaniel. It has more rhyme and there's more just sort of joie de vivre to it. Flo J. Johnson's mom on Coach Mulkey and all this, oh, she picks fights with the players and she's this and she's that. And because she and Brittany Griner didn't get along at Baylor, kind of, sort of. Although Brittany Griner's comments were, interestingly, pretty muted compared to the hyperventilation that was featured in the rest of that Amazon Post story. And then, of course, some nitwit over at the L.A. Times who just sort of cut and pasted and came with his moral indignation, because that's what the mob and the media do.
It's kind of crazy because this day and time, at a certain age, I just feel like people should know. If you haven't ever met a person, how could you judge them? You know what I mean? And these are 40 and 50-year-old people on the internet, like, throwing daggers at a woman they've never even spoke to, which is very weird to me. I can see kids doing it, but adults, seems like at this point in your life, you should know, dang, I never even really met this woman. I gave her a chance before I just judged her. I've met Coach Mulkey. Everything Coach Mulkey told me, or everything I asked her about my kid, she kept it real. You know what I'm saying? And when Flaude says she's an OG, to be able to navigate the different situations that may come with players and parents and coaching and being a coach and just dealing with so much. And I trust her with my kid. Honestly, I do, because she's not going to baby Flaude. She's going to make her a woman. When she leave here, she's going to be a woman. You know what I'm saying? And I respect that, because I'm not easy on Flaude. You know, I was hard on her. Like, anything you want in life, you got to go get it. You got to go fight for it. It's a million kids out here trying to do what you're doing. So what's going to separate you?
That is the best compliment a parent could ever give a coach.
Yeah.
Is what she just said. You know, she's not going to go easy on her. She's going to make her a better person. You want to create good citizens, good people. And I love that. And I've known of her for years, obviously. But she's just... she's true to herself. She's true to her play. And she doesn't care what people say about her. I mean, she cares to an extent. And she wore pink boa one time.
She didn't care about what was said about her, but she cared about what was said about her players. And that's where she focused her attention, which is right and proper. I mean, she seems like, to borrow an Angie Dickinsonism, big bad mama.
Well, she does kind of look like Angie Dickinson. I mean, she's a grandma. My grandma didn't look like that when I was growing up, I can tell you that.
That's great.
The flamboyancy, like, she's just true to herself. She's Louisiana. She's, you know, in your face. She's a tough coach, and she's successful. And also, she knows why she lost last night. It's real simple.
Generational player that you're not going to stop.
Caitlin.
But she had two players that scored 21 and 18 today. And you can't allow that when you've got your hands full with Clark. You only lose on the scoreboard. But if you learn from a loss, you'll be back here next year. Iowa deserved a win. They made the plays, and they have Caitlin Clark. Thank you, Coach. You're welcome.
Yeah, I was like Zach Edey carrying Purdue across the finish line over the weekend. I also like that Flo J. Johnson, her mom is one of the reasons Flo J. Johnson is on that great LSU team, too. It's almost enough to make me care about women's basketball. It's not quite, but it's almost enough.
Well, we got you kind of to care, right?
Yeah,
I think you're caring.
Carl Northlake.
It was a good game
all
the way through the first half. I hated seeing Angel Reese go down because I wanted a good competitive game. And then they wrapped her ankle, and she was able to play just fine. I was tickled on that, but...
Well, she fouled out in the fourth quarter at the beginning of the fourth.
Yeah. Well, yeah, game was already over, though. If, you know, and Caitlin Clark just killed it. You know, 5 minutes in the third quarter was over. Not only is Caitlin Clark an astute player, she is a great coach. She knows the game. She's put her name in to go pro, not only to be a player, but she's going to get a head coach job, too.
She might as well be a player coach right out of the gate, like Lou Boudreaux or something.
But I love the Angel Reese, Caitlin Clark saga, because that's what this is going to happen. I mean, Angel Reese is deciding whether or not to go pro, because she could be a senior next year or just go into the WNBA. But I bet they'll pit her against a team that's, you know, competitive against the Indiana Fever. And then, boom, it'll blow up like Angel Reese and Caitlin Clark. You know, one's a villain, one's America's sweetheart.
No, it won't. They'll go pro and then they'll disappear, just like the WNBA has. I don't think so. Sorry.
Right, we'll
and by the
and
way,
I'm not going to make any bets, but I'm just saying that would be a marketing tool to promote the WNBA.
Well, I mean, sure, obviously, Caitlin Clark by herself is a marketing tool, but like a Bird Magic kind of Jordan,
Lambeer,
Isaiah, or whatever. Yeah, maybe.
Get a mask on Angel Reese, get her.
Yeah, right. Huh? But can I just say one thing about this? I mean, it's fine if people like women's basketball and stuff, and I appreciate that Caitlin Clark is a great player, and so is Angel Reese for that matter. But please don't tell me that I like the women's game better than the men's game because they're more fundamentally sound. Please stop saying that. If you're a person who says that, please stop saying that because it's not true. It's a ridiculous thing. It's pandering, especially when men say it. It's just not true. If you say that, you know nothing about basketball. Okay. It's just that's not too much to ask. It's just like calling her the all-time leading scorer in college basketball history instead of Pete Maravich. I don't think I'm asking too much. Stop saying ridiculous things. Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
Your show keeps me alive during the week. There's nobody I'd rather listen to between 5 and 9 in the morning than you guys.
On AM 560, The Answer.
That means it's time for in-depth history with Frank, the history teacher from Arlington Heights, because there's nothing new in this world. It's just the history you don't know. Today's a doozy. It connects a 10th century Chinese dynasty with the Biden administration. Only Frank from Arlington Heights can do that. Take it away, Frank.
Good morning. Around the time of the Sung dynasty in the 10th century China, the practice of foot binding became commonplace. Forced on young girls, their feet were broken and tightly bound to deform them permanently so they would be less mobile and stay in the home and not be corrupted. Many of these women would never leave their homes. Not to be outdone, medieval European societies, too, through the oppressive manorial system, created hyper-localized economies as the peasant serf was bound to the land and never left his or her village in a typical 30-year life. So both Orient and Occident actually had 15-minute cities 1,000 years before the WF's New Age elitists could dream them up. Recently, the Biden regime's edict on tailpipe emissions also portends a future of reduced mobility for Americans, as more production of electric vehicles is a stated goal of the now 8-year American GOS plan. The problems with EVs are legion: limited range, long charging times, limited chargers, heavier weight, higher price, and insurance costs. Sales of them have stalled as a result. But the green energy demons at the EPA know best, so it looks like these cars will be produced, creating huge misallocations of resources and capital. It's hard to take our elite seriously, though. They certainly can't hold a candle to the ancient and classical Mayan elites of cities like Tikal, Palenque, and Chichen Itza, because their sun god demanded bloodletting from the population on a consistent basis, and their royalty had to participate too, as some rituals required blood of the highest cosmic value, blood taken from areas of their bodies that produce the seeds of future kings. That's quite a standard that somehow I don't think will be lived up to today.
Well, don't speak so soon. on that, I wouldn't foreclose that possibility. I didn't hear an opinion on the breaking of feet and binding them. So I didn't. Is that?
Horrible. A lot of the wealthy families in China at that time, it was a good thing for them, and it was supposed to be beautiful. So
small feet was in back then. Frank.
Yeah, small feet were
no,
in.
It was
in. Yeah. All right.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
Your show keeps me alive during the week. There's nobody I'd rather listen to between 5 and 9 in the morning than you guys.
On AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. This freaking FBI, man. Have you seen these posts that are circulating of the FBI coming and knocking on people's doors because they want to talk to them about social media posts?
Yeah. Is this not an April Fool's joke, right?
It's not an April Fool's joke. It's so disturbing. And since they've destroyed their credibility, the FBI has, with so much of the population, and I'm included in that. I'm sorry. I'm not giving them the benefit of the doubt here of their good nature to keep everybody safe proactively, but of course operating within the bounds of people's constitutional rights. I don't believe it. I don't believe them. I don't believe in the leadership, and I don't believe in the directives coming from the leadership. Here is an example of what I'm talking about. This is a guy who goes by the Twitter handle Misfit Patriot. He's in San Antonio. FBI shows up to his door. He apparently wasn't home, but they're speaking through the intercom and, you know, the front of his building.
Yeah.
And then he, you know, comments on his subsequent conversation, phone conversation with the FBI. Take a listen.
Are you home? We'd like to speak to you for a second. No, I'm not home. What is this in regards to? This is, if you'd like, I can meet you or I can meet you.
So that's the full recording that I have. Now, right after that video cut off, I gave him my number to call me because it was very choppy. As you can see, I was repeating stuff. So I talked to Mr. Hyland on the phone. And by the way, as far as I know, this is an actual FBI agent who works with the actual FBI. And this is a LinkedIn page showing that FBI agent who works in my city. So, conspiracy theorists, most likely that's the FBI, okay? People don't make badges and show up to random people's houses and then record themselves talking to them impersonating agents. Just side note. Now, I would never drop a recorded phone call with the FBI, even if I had one, so you're going to have to take my word for this next part. I talked to this agent on the phone. The agent said that they were at my house, and the only thing that they could tell me is it was in regards to my social media. I asked them if it was about a specific post on my social media, and the reply from the agent was, "No, we looked at your social media and found nothing illegal. We are just here to check off a box. It's procedure." To which I replied, "You need to talk to my attorney. I've told you guys, be prepared for anything, and that includes the FBI coming to your house." So, my attorney reached out to them 5 seconds after I got off the phone with them, which was 5 minutes after I talked to them. They did not answer. They have not returned my attorney's call to this date. We have no further information. I have also reached out to more than one journalist, and they have reached out, as far as I know, and have not heard back either. So, the FBI is showing up to people's houses that aren't committing crimes and trying to check off boxes. Let me know what you think of that.
I'll let you know what I think of that. I think it's chilling at best. And by the way, so before those on the left who believe the ends justify the means and are happy to suspend the constitutional rights of people with whom they disagree, ignorantly believing this will never boomerang back on them because they're saving democracy. Let me give you another example from the other side, as it were. You know, this guy goes by Misfit Patriot, you know, probably right of center, probably pro-Trump. Well, Rala Abdeljawad of Stillwater, Oklahoma is not. She claims she was told by FBI agents who showed up at her door, Facebook handed over screenshots of her posts, which was public, so Facebook didn't need to hand over anything. This was, and apparently she had posted some things that were anti, you know, Israel in some fashion. Okay.
Like most of Chicagoans and our aldermen, but okay, go on.
Right, right. Yeah, Sigcho Lopez, right.
Yeah.
Facebook gave us a couple of screenshots of your account, said one agent wearing a gray shirt, said, you know, in this video. She replied, "So we no longer live in a free country and we can't say what we want." The agent said, "No, we totally do. That's why we're not here to arrest you or anything.
Oh, that's nice.
We do this every day, all day long. It's just an effort to keep everybody safe and make sure nobody has ill will.
What?
Make sure nobody has ill will. That's the job of the FBI.
When did the FBI become traitors of our country?
Well, when did they become policing people's feelings and interpersonal, the status of their interpersonal relationships, whether you feel good about the people you're communicating with or you don't, or your leadership of the country or you don't, or the particular people involved in a particular issue or event?
Why are they focusing on
to keep everybody safe, make sure nobody has ill will? She said, all I've done is exercise my right as an American citizen on a public social media platform with my personal opinions. Yeah.
They should not focus on feelings. They should focus on real violent threats that are made on Facebook.
For more on this, we're pleased to be joined by Andy McCarthy. He, of course, is a former chief assistant U.S. attorney for the Southern District of New York. That's Manhattan. Contributing editor, National Review, author of the bestseller Ball of Collusion, The Plot to Rig an Election and Destroy a Presidency. Andy, thanks for joining us, as always. Appreciate it.
That's my pleasure.
So, does my pretty vociferous antagonism in the direction of the FBI warranted here, or am I taking it too far?
Well, yeah, I think that the FBI has to deal with the fact that they've made a record over the past decade plus of some very bad politicized behavior, and therefore people don't trust them anymore. And, you know, when you have an organization that is trustworthy, you can do a lot of things and people won't be too upset about it. Compared to what you have now. For example, back after 9/11, agents were very aggressive, and I encouraged them to be in trying to gather information about threats to the United States. And that involved talking to a lot of people who may have been involved in suspicious behavior or with suspicious groups, maybe associated with radical mosques, but who they didn't have probable cause had committed any crimes, and they would try to chat them up and get information. And at the time, they had a pretty good reputation for doing that the right way, and everybody recognized that we had a national security threat. We had just gotten attacked and 3,000 people had been killed. But if you flash forward 25 years, we're in a very different environment now. They've been very politicized over the last number of years. I think they've been actively used. I'm not sure if it's everybody in the FBI, but there's certainly some offices in the FBI which have been actively used in promoting a democratic narrative that right-of-center people are like a step away from becoming domestic terrorists. I think that's picking up steam because part of the Democrats don't have, you know, Biden doesn't have a record that's pleasing to the country to run on. So what they're going to run on is Trump, and they're going to run on Trump and the Capitol riot. So the kind of stuff that we're seeing is, I think, going to be stepped up. And if you thought that the Bureau was acting in good faith and that they wouldn't go out and have a chat with someone unless they really thought that there was a crime or a threat of force problem, if they had that kind of credibility, I think people would give them a lot of rhythm to do this kind of thing. But since they don't, you want to know what's their probable cause for going out there to talk to somebody like that. And if they don't have it, then why are they allowed to do that?
Well, I mean, it's particularly when they use phrases like, you know, we're just here to keep everybody safe and make sure no one has ill will. I'll tell you what, agent, I have ill will towards you and the agency you work for. How does that grab you? So are you going to be checking boxes at my place on a routine basis because I'm all welled up with ill will towards federal law enforcement agencies that behave in just the way you described? I mean, that the whole attitude is Orwellian, frankly.
Yeah, but I don't disagree with you, but this has been going on for a long time. People complain about it, and every year their budget increases.
Yeah, well, I hear you.
People like me say, you want to stop the behavior.
Yep.
The only language they understand in Washington is slash their budget and put severe limits on what they're allowed to do.
Absolutely.
So there's a lot of gas bagging. People go on television and whinge and whine about it. But when it comes time to sign off on the omnibus multi-trillion dollar budget, the next thing you know, the Justice Department's gone from being a $30 billion agency to a $40 billion agency.
100%, 100%. So to that end, I mean, I don't want to do this to be punitive because I don't want to be as venal as I'm accusing them of being. But what about something like when you talk about reining in their scope and the powers that they can access under color of law? What about Section 702 that Christopher Wray is pumping for renewal, and at least some constitutional oriented senators in the Republican ranks like Lee and Rand Paul are balking at that?
Yeah, well, I think they're I don't think they're very constitutional on this. I like Lee and Paul, but I don't, you know, when they start to talk about the Fourth Amendment, my head starts to explode. 702 is about gathering foreign intelligence against people outside the United States, non-Americans who want to attack the country or might want to attack the country. And we don't give the FBI that authority because we think they're great guys. We give them that authority because the country, we have people out in the world who want to attack the United States and mean ill toward Americans, and we have to guard the country against them. And when they abuse those powers, the thing to do is to hold accountable the people who abuse the powers. It's not to take the powers away. We don't give the powers because we want to give the powers. We give the powers because we have people who hate America and want to attack our country.
But Andy, if I could interrupt, but as you're referencing the almost 300,000 times they abuse that power, and the problem is that you don't have a Justice Department that will hold them accountable. So how do you get a Justice Department that holds accountable abuses of power like we've seen under 702? And I guess the answer would be make more judicious choices at the ballot box. But I mean, is there anything else?
Well, I think that to my mind, I think that you need to use the civil rights laws affirmatively against government agents who violate people's actual civil rights. So it's not enough to report to the FISA court that we overstepped the bounds of the minimization instructions and in the 702 orders that get signed off on. The people who do that have to be held accountable. They have to be publicly identified. The FBI doesn't seem to fire anyone. If they do, they do it very quietly, so no one feels like there's ever any vindication. And I think people who, when government agents go to social media companies and cross the line and get them to suppress people's speech, or if they intimidate people, with respect to their speech or behavior, that's got to be investigated under the civil rights laws. If it was a Democratic Justice Department as it is now, and there was an inkling that the police were doing something that the left disapproved of, they would be all over it with a civil rights lawsuit. And I think what has to happen is you have to get a Republican or conservative government that's willing to use the civil rights laws to uphold the actual Bill of Rights protections of Americans, not just preferred leftist agitators.
All right. Well, speaking of suppressed speech, what about this gag order on former President Trump? I mean, he had to know it was coming, right?
Well, he had to know it was coming, but that doesn't make it right. You know, the theory now, this order, AV, was expanded now so that Trump's not supposed to talk about the judge's daughter. The judge's daughter is a Democratic political activist. He's got an absolute First Amendment right, and I think he's got a right in the trial to argue that he's being railroaded by a progressive elected Democratic DA who wouldn't have brought this case against anyone else, and that the judge should recuse himself. He's got a right to make that argument. And instead, what Judge Merchan is saying is that even though the district attorney hasn't accused Trump of incitement, nor could he because Trump didn't direct anybody to do anything, that basically, it's Trump has such power that when he says things, there are crazies out there who will act on it in an intimidating way, and therefore it's too punitive for people who are in the system, like judges and prosecutors, to do their jobs because now they have to worry about members of their family being intimidated. Trump didn't pick out Merchant's daughter like out of the sky for no reason, right, just randomly. She's a Democratic political activist who works for Democrats who define themselves by how much they loathe Trump.
Like Adam Schiff.
And judge on this case.
Yeah, and right, they're so intimidated by what Trump will do and what he says that his daughter makes money by sending out email fundraising and her company by sending out email fundraising asks based on what Trump has said, and that's how she helps to fundraise for Adam Schiff and other Democrat clients. I mean, give me a break, as you said. The specifics of it are even worse than she's just some political operative in the ecosystem. She traffics in things that Trump says to raise money from the base for candidates that, as you said, have built their career around trying to put Trump in jail and take away his stuff. I mean, give me a so in terms of the recusal, I mean, it's not going to happen, I suppose, because why would this thing not stay as wired up as it is? But I mean, do you think that the judge in this case, because of his daughter in a real justice system, would recuse himself? That would be the right and proper thing to do.
It would be the right and proper thing to do. It doesn't even have to. You don't have to prove actual bias. There's just you just need to show an appearance of impropriety.
Right.
And here you have it looks to me like you have bias all over the place. A good judge would want to get off this case so that the integrity of the process wasn't questioned. But this whole thing is look, Trump is entitled. You may not believe that it's rigged, and he may get acquitted, or he may get convicted. I don't know. But he's allowed to make the argument, especially given that he's running for president. You know, these courts, to me, the most offensive thing about this is they think that there's nothing else that's a higher interest in the American government than the administration of justice and their little trials. Mm-hmm. And that's more important than, the First Amendment interest in an election that's decided by the public rather than partisan prosecutors. And Trump, because he is the major party candidate of one of the two parties, that has to be respected by the court. He's allowed to run for president. The Constitution allows him to do that. So to my mind, it is very simple. If the courts are worried about the administration of justice in these cases, put them off until after the election's over. If you're not going to put them off until after the election's over, fine, then Trump should only be limited in what he can say by the way the First Amendment limits you, which is he can't incite violence and he can't defame anyone. And if he does that, he can be sued or prosecuted. But otherwise, there shouldn't be. The courts are creating this situation by forcing these trials to be scheduled prior to the election. That's what the problem is. They've forced this situation.
Andy McCarthy, former Chief Assistant U.S. Attorney, Southern District of New York, contributing editor, National Review, author of the bestseller Ball of Collusion, The Plot to Rig an Election and Destroy a Presidency. Thank you, as always, for your insights, Andy. Appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you, and he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Before you see it on TV, share it on Facebook, or read about it in the paper, hear it here first. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The answer.
Insert Democrat socialist here.
Runs the Democratic House floor for 30 plus years running. He's promising this and he's stealing that. Where can you get that kind of money? He's using your house like his own piggy bank. Gang. You ought to know by now. You can pay off your house here in Illinois. You can never keep up with the taxes. Oh, how it's always been the plan to have a taxpayer pay no doubt. Not a matter of if anymore, but when you're moving out. I said, when you're moving out.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. That's the music means it's time for our weekly confab with Ted Dabrowski, president of wirepoints.org, all things Illinois policy related. And a good piece over at wirepoints.org that finds that Nickelodeon has nothing on the Chicago public school system when it comes to predation on young people. Sexual abuse and misconduct cases. 2023, there were 446 detailed in the Inspector General's 2024 report, ranging from misconduct and sexual harassment to non-sexual conduct that raises the appearance of impropriety or possible grooming concerns. That's a quote from the IG's report. For example, profiled over at WirePoints, security guard sexually abused a 16-year-old student for approximately 5 months. In his capacity as a security guard, he pulled the student out of class to have sex in various locations in the school, such as storage rooms and janitorial closets. He also sexually assaulted the student in his car and his home.
Is he in jail?
Don't know the status.
Of course not.
Another case, an employee of a vendor after-school program sexually assaulted an elementary student at the student's school in multiple locations between 2014 and 2017 when the student was 7 to 10 years old. The student disclosed three separate incidences, and, you know, it's all of a sexual nature. I won't get into the details of it. The abuse took place in the school's gym and cafeteria. It's disturbing. This is a pedophile, obviously. Where's the outcry? Who's got this story other than WirePoints? Where's the I-team investigating?
Chuck Gowdy.
What about, here we go again. Where are those do-gooding trial lawyers who protect the little people against the big corporations? Government, I thought. No, not CPS. Parents? Father Flager. The wonderful civic elders. How about the Panjan drums at the City Club or the Economic Club? Anybody in C-suite Chicago? No?
Well,
just WirePoints?
I do know one thing. If they're accused of sexual abuse or sexual assault, they still get paid, Dan, while they're at home awaiting their trial because the CTU worked that into their contract.
Of course.
And some should be in jail, from what I've been reading, thanks to WirePoints, because if they did that out on the street or if they were somewhere else, say it even like at a gym you rent and they molested a 7 to 10 year old, why, or a 7 year old and or a 10 year old, whatever, it doesn't matter, they molested them, they'd be in jail.
Elementary school teacher sexually assaulted a 12-year-old child in Indiana. Child between the ages of 12 to 16 in Illinois and was arrested in Indiana, sentenced to 50 years in prison. Do you know about that case? No, of course not. Why?
Teachers are supposed to be our heroes.
Well, it's more than that. It's because institutions are to be protected. And CPS is to be protected at all costs. So now, for example, the Catholic Church, and I don't believe the church should be protected or CPS should be protected. Nobody committing this kind of misconduct should be protected. But you'll take notice of who is and who isn't. Because it speaks to an agenda. What else could it possibly be? Ted, thanks for joining us as always. Appreciate it.
Morning, Dan. Good morning, Amy.
Have you gotten a lot of inquiries from the Chicago Press Corps, the civic institutions, the professional associations?
You're right.
About the Chicagoland Chamber of Commerce, teachers union, all the stakeholders in CPS? Huh? A lot of conversation about this happening now because of those reports?
Well, absolutely. Absolutely not. And of course, we just put it out late last night, so they haven't had a chance to review it yet. But
oh, sure.
You did.
You had a chance to review the IG's report. They have the same access to the IG's report you do.
Exactly. Well, you know, this thing came out, you know, in January, and you know, it got just a dribble of attention, right, when it came out. And I give some credit to Willie Wilson, because a couple of weeks ago he came out and wrote an op-ed. You know, former candidate for mayor of Chicago, he came out and wrote an op-ed that criticized all this and said, you know, you can't teach kids when sexual abuse is, you know, is rampant. And so good for him to do that. And it reminded me that I've wanted to take this stuff, all these cases are lost in a long 130-page report that nobody's going to read. You know, just bring these cases to life, because they're scary. They're plentiful, sadly. And, you know, what it tells you is that, you know, years after the Chicago Tribune report, you know, when they did that big report called Betrayed back in 2018, yeah. You know, CPS got some attention for that. You know, nothing's really been done. I mean, they've done a couple of things, but when you compare the Catholic Church has done, and I spent a good bit of time looking at what the Catholic Church did over the whatever it was, you know, quite a few years to block this kind of stuff. It's hard to commit crimes right now in the Catholic Church. Here at CPS, they're still doing it. You know why? Is it because they don't get caught? It looks to me like it's still a culture that allows this stuff to happen, and that's why you have these stories play out all the time. Not only just sexual abuse cases, but cases where they're flirting with the kids, they're grooming them, they're doing all kinds of stuff. You're talking about young kids, thousands of texts. When you look at the number of teachers that are texting students, you know, you're talking about thousands of texts. It's scary. So they're still allowing this stuff. And like you said, CPS is protected. The unions are protected. The vendors, you know, a lot of this stuff is done by vendors and security guards. And so the jurisdiction kind of falls apart. Who's in charge of these people? They get away with it eventually. It's really sad. And, you know, they give a pretty good bit of detail in the Inspector General report of what eventually happens.
Well, I mean, you look, the City Club is focused on important things like legalizing prostitution. And so, I mean, this makes perfect sense. So CPS can be a pipeline to the sex worker industry since they're not teaching kids how to read and do math. They can groom them to be prostitutes at the Gimme Doze Hoes, Gimme Dat Brothel, brought to you by Brandon Johnson and J.B. Pritzker and Tony Preckwinkle at some point. So, I mean, that there's, you know, providing career paths, I guess, for CPS students with what's happening here, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, I think the whole cultural case, the moral case, it's so upside down. And we complain a lot about how kids can't read at CPS, but, you know, there's something a little bit scarier than kids can't read, and that's when employees are sexually abusing your children. And that should be issue number one, right? If you can't feel safe, if you can't feel protected in the school, then you know, forget it. And you know, it goes back to why CPS should just be totally reconstituted, start over, blast it, create a whole bunch of different schools, go to school choice. There's any one of the options that are available. It needs to be done, because I think this just points at the not just the fiscal corruption, but the moral corruption and moral bankruptcy at CPS.
I mean, but if you work at CPS or if you're a vendor or security guard, everybody has to go through this thorough training where you have to sign an agreement. You will not text a student. I mean, unless you know them from, like, you have their number from your neighborhood or from, you know, one of your son's friends, but you cannot text students. That is so taboo. And they know that, but they obviously don't care because they're using texting to groom them and to take advantage of them. But the thing is,
it goes even further than, you know, it's amazing. I mean, it goes further than that. You know, they have cases where the teachers are taking, you know, young kids to restaurants and to their homes. And it's just, you know, there it is, all, you know, one after another. And, you know, again, just don't care because they're not going to get caught. They're not going to get busted. It's the same thing. It's like the crime we talked about. You're not going to get busted, so you might as well go for it.
Well, and also, too, you know, hey, Ted, big city living. It's a big school system. There's, what do they lie and say, 325,000 kids? Maybe there's 250, 275, I don't know. But it's a big system. It's talking about 100,000 as a kid. You know, there's going to be some bad apples. There's going to be some people fall through the cracks. There's going to be some, you know, bad actors and bad actions taken. And it's just like violent crime. You know, it's just big city living. Just for the most part, it's not a problem. But, you know, you're going to have in any system, there are going to be some imperfections. That's all.
Yeah, you know, we say the same thing about crime. Same thing. You know, it's just a big city. We're going to have lots of murders and shootings, and just have to roll with it. Stop complaining.
Wait. There's one case where a high school coach sent 757 text messages to a sophomore, an 11th grader, and it included sexually explicit messages and videos of his genitalia. And the Cook County State's Attorney's Office rejected charges. Now, why do you think that is, Ted?
So, you know, and you'll see that in the report where, you know, somebody tries to do something, then the charges are rejected. You know, it's a lot of times a jurisdictional fight, whether it's, you know, Cook County, Chicago, is it a vendor, the vendor's not a school employee, and the next thing you know, the look. Here's what the Catholic Church did, and it was really tough. Right? But you know, first thing is they created a one strike and you're out. You certainly don't have that at CPS. You know, they have a website the Catholic Church does, a website that has all the offenders. You can see who they are. You can track them. And if you're a school district somewhere else, and you look on that website, and you see that guy on the site, you're not going to hire that guy. But we don't have that for CPS, and so there really aren't. You know, we do this training and stuff like that, but it's worthless. It's, you know, you got to really hammer on these people and really, you know, go after them. And of course, you have to do great screening and.
You're gonna train a pedophile to not be a pedophile through some bull jive, yeah. You know, slide presentation. Of course not. It's on the screening side, and then on the punishment side to make sure that there's a culture of accountability within the system. But I mean, that's just a bridge too far. That's too much depth for CPS. And as long as nobody cares, then just steady as she goes. I wanted to get your take on this little spring break trip you took, where you drove from Illinois to Florida to be reminded of what civilization looks like, and what you experienced on the road trip.
Well, you know, I drive to Florida usually every year, go down to the Panhandle, and you can't help but go through Indiana and Tennessee and Kentucky and Alabama on the way there.
Yeah.
And what you quickly remember is, you know, you fill up before you leave, and you know, you pay whatever is $4 a gallon, and then next thing you know, you're down in Tennessee spending $3.11 or $3.15 or whatever it is. You know, you're saving oftentimes $1 per gallon when you're on the road, and it tells you, well, what the hell, you know, why isn't Governor Pritzker and all those people who voted for that Capitol bill that doubled the gas tax, why are they just lambasted for what they did? It's crazy. We have to pay so much more per gallon, and, you know, and you're talking about very regressive taxes on gasoline. So, you know, you're talking about affecting the poor, the working class most. And so in every state you go down, you see how much cheaper it is. And you know what's amazing is they have paved roads in Tennessee.
Right, the roads are better.
And in Alabama. Yeah,
and no,
you know,
tolls.
So it just really, really ticks you off that they've done this. And it's just such an easy example of how corrupt Illinois is to do that. And you don't get anything additional for your dollar a gallon extra in cost. You don't get anything. You're just funding the corruption that's rampant in Illinois.
Second highest gas taxes in the nation, behind only
for
California.
What? I know, for what though?
Forget second highest gas taxes.
No, I'm saying, like, what are we getting for it?
Oh yeah, right.
Yeah.
Well, and you know, and that's, oh well, you know, these other states are warm weather states, so they don't have the wear and tear on the roads. It's funny. Ohio's not a warm weather state. So there's a whole list of not warm weather states. Montana, I don't believe, is a warm weather state.
No, it's not.
You know, so when you're second highest in the nation, there's a lot of other cold weather states, including all those that surround you, that give lie to that argument. But again, as you say, regressive tax, lying.
Just real quick,
but that's,
you know,
okay.
We wrote that piece, Simple Peace, and you know, and it's been read all over the state. I mean, people really grabbed onto it. They it hurts them. You can tell just by the readership of this article, simple article. It ticks people off.
Yeah, it ticks them off just enough to say, Illinois is terrible. I want to leave, and I'll plot my exit, but I won't do anything in the interim. At least that's the suburbanites. Actually, the suburbanites, it's even more. It's there. That's the where the blinders are on. That's where the self-delusion. Do not pierce my self-delusion. I have to continue to rationalize my existence here, the choices I've made, the life I'm living, and so I don't want to hear anything that would upset this fictional world I've created in my head about the community in which I live and the state in which I live. I get it. That's why they're so antagonistic with the people who've left. You know, you're in Florida, you're in Tennessee, or you're in Vegas. I had lunch with Jeff Carter yesterday, who left after 30 years and is in Vegas with his family. You know, guy who was at the Merck and started High Park Angels and all this stuff. Now he's not allowed to comment. Not allowed to comment on Chicago. Get Chicago out your mouth. Right. No matter what you contributed, no matter how much you care, no matter what you see, you cannot prick the bubble that these people live in. There's nothing, because to do that would bring them face to face with the reality they've created, and they just can't bring themselves to admit what they've done and with whom they've done it, can they?
What's fascinating is how many Jeff Carters have left Illinois, and many of them. I know many of them. These are people who are very successful, created businesses, create jobs, and yet most of them have been chased away because.
The response is what? Good riddance.
Good riddance.
You're the bad guy now because you left, because you're not wallowing in misery and platforming ignorance like I am, at least until I can get out. Really persuasive stuff.
I think the most amazing one for me is, they talk about Alabama that way. A lot of times when we write about people leaving, we'll get some pushback about, people, go to Alabama, go to Tennessee. It's fascinating the amount of investment, the amount of growth, the amount of opportunity that these states are creating for people. It's phenomenal. You take northern Alabama, and you've got tons of investment. I was in Tennessee for the night again. But they've got so much growth, it might be too much growth. But their problem.
How many cranes were in the sky?
How many kids from Chicago schools, like Chicago suburban schools, are going to SEC schools these days? Because of the heavy recruitment there and the scholarship money that's being offered. Alabama, Miami, Florida, Georgia, all these SEC schools, they're killing it with Midwest out-of-staters from the Midwest coming to their schools because they know they don't have a future in Illinois. So, but, hey, take that for what it's worth, and the nattering nabobs of fictional worlds, those that believe they live in Candide or have to believe they live in Candide and just sort of reflexively attack anybody who points out what Chicago and Chicagoland has actually become. Fine. Okay. No problem. Ted Dabrowski, president of Wirepoints, wirepoints.org, all things Illinois policy related. Thanks, Ted.
Thank you, Dan. Thank you, Amy.
Thank you, and glad you had a safe trip, and you're back. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Connect with Dan and Amy on the AM 560 The Answer mobile app. Just text the word app to 64636 to download the app today.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560 The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Understanding Chicago and its pathologies. Not a lot of people may be interested in this. I don't know. But when you see a great city self-immolate, maybe there's some interest in understanding why. Jeff Carter, who I mentioned when we were talking to Ted Dabrowski, entrepreneur, trader at the Merck.
Friend of the show.
Friend of the show. He writes at Points and Figures is his Substack. Illinois expat now, like so many. He wrote this piece 6 years ago. And it was about why Chicago lost out on those Amazon distribution centers, you may remember at the time, to New York and Washington, D.C. It was a big play. Chicago loses out again. Chicago's been losing out on a lot of big plays over the last several decades, hasn't it? Mm-hmm. Especially big plays that are not completely driven by government. And, of course, that's only accelerated exponentially with the combination of the lockdowns during the pandemic, the lawlessness that has been sanctioned by the city government and state government. And the rise now of the government union such that they have command control over the city and the state. So in the intervening 6 years, the somewhat, I wouldn't say rosy scenario, but hopeful scenario that Carter recounted in this piece, it's completely destroyed. And he would say it's completely gone. The tech investment where you've seen a return in places like Austin, Silicon Valley. It's over the edge in Chicago. It's a government town, and that's it. That's the main business. But the closed network piece of this, this is, you know, in large measure, and Carter's a Booth MBA, I think based on the research of Ronald Burt, who's a sociology professor at UFC. So, you know, why Chicago lost out on the Amazon distribution centers and you know, what it says more globally about Chicago, and then thinking about 6 years that's passed. Why not Chicago? Writes Carter. It's a big city, logistically perfect. Talent-wise, super easy to recruit in Chicago. Less so now. Tech, marketing, logistical talent seems to be the stuff Amazon needed. People postulated reasons for not Chicago. Sam Zell at the time cited the political situation. John Plett said cranes. The pro-rent-seeking, anti-business business magazine for Chicago. Need I say more? I'm going to take a different cut at it, he writes. Chicago's a closed network. Closed network, the network effect. Look at the 600-member committee that was tasked with bringing Amazon here. See anyone that isn't connected to anyone? See any looseness around? It's the same names in Chicago over and over again. The same people, and they get all connected back to the Democrat political machine, which is suffocating growth in Illinois and the city of Chicago. Great gains are not planned or linear. They jump all graphical lines. They often are accidents. That doesn't happen in tightly controlled networks. Closed networks like predictability, not randomness. And it's always been a closed network, Chicago has, since its inception. Actually, he makes a reference to a good book you should read if you want to understand this more deeply. Yeah, Milton Rakoff's Nobody, We Don't Want Nobody, Nobody Sent. That's a good one. But City of the Century is really good. He writes, the only places that were open in Chicago were the trading floors. And that brought new blood to the city. The floors were merit-based, and it was about can you do this and can you survive? If you knew the speaker or the mayor, you might have gotten a wink once in a while, but you had to perform. Chicago isn't going to change because it's too fearful for the power drivers in the network to have a lot of new people that will make outcomes more random. He recounts a meeting where a local Paul invited him to talk about TIF financing, get his thoughts, because, you know, he's got a good financial mind.
Right.
We were talking about the tax increment financing districts and what to do about them. I didn't know a lot about them, so I listened and asked a lot of questions. Oh, boy, this is your first mistake. At the end of the meeting, they asked me what I thought. I said, it seems that the TIFs give a lot of power to one person, the alderman. Why not just take all that power away, all that application process and paperwork away, and simply lower the taxes across the entire district for businesses that decide to locate and employ people there? you could anticipate what happens next. What happened next is that Jeff Carter was never invited back to a meeting. Why? Because an idea like that is too scary to people in a closed network that want to control things. They don't want nobody, nobody sent. He writes, at the time, I think Amazon saw that on their visits here. If you spend enough time here, you get a sense of that. We lose entrepreneurs to the coast because of this attitude. Outlier ideas are very unsettling. But those are the ones that can become blowout ideas. Uber should have started in Chicago, but I bet if the Uber guy tried to raise a seed round here, he would have people look at him like he had four eyes. Black car service on your phone? Random? Come on. The other reason we lose entrepreneurs is lack of capital. And one of the reasons there's a lack of capital is because of the closed network. It's tough to raise capital if you're the nobody that nobody sent. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 646-36-DA, turnkey.pro text line. That closed network piece of it. That, you know, the trading floors are an exception, were an exception, but those are gone. And yeah, you know, you have smart people in the financial services and some tech. And, I mean, you know, some manufacturing in the region, less and less so Chicago proper. But what about that closed network? Do you think that's gotten any better? No, it's getting worse. Why? Because the It's gotten better. Some would argue, it's gotten better because, you know, the Irish machine isn't in charge anymore. Eh. It's so the old machine to the new machine, that's the government sector union machine, where they're in the driver's seat. It's the same system. So you have just sort of a closed network layered over a closed network. And all of it runs through government. So how does having two closed networks competing for dominance of the of the overall closed network, how does that spur those random incursions of entrepreneurs, new people, new ideas? It doesn't. It doesn't. And it never will. So Chicago has all of these inherent advantages that everybody spends so much time talking about, as does Illinois. Our location, our infrastructure, Samba, the lake and the river system and the surface transportation and the airports and so on and so forth. Well, yeah. And all that was, all that promise has slowly and methodically been eliminated by the state as the state grew and the closed network expanded their fiefdom. What's happened? Illinois has become the worst governed state in American history by the numbers. Chicago is the worst governed state, governed city in the country by the numbers.
And that's why all of you smart people moved out.
Yeah, I mean, it's very much, you know, this is not unusual. I mean, think about it in a political party setting. All political parties are sort of afraid of randomness, you know, the people in charge. It's not just Illinois, but it includes Illinois. But think about that. I've said this for, I don't know, 15 years. That's why I ran for governor 15 years ago. Probably said it for 20 years. All of this wait your turn business. Organizations that tell people to wait their turn with no promise or no path to advancement lose talented people. And instead of taking an American Idol approach to candidate recruitment, for example, the Republican Party is a wait your turn party. Yeah. And well, I mean, so are the Democrats, but it's just it's a completely different operation.
So when you ran for governor, did they tell you to wait your turn?
It didn't wait. It's not about even like telling me to wait my turn at that point, because, I mean, you know, who's listening? It's just that you're not going to be accepted in the Republican Party. You're not going to be accepted with the movers and shakers, the visionless financiers of the Republican Party at the time. And frankly, since, with a few exceptions, that were part of the closed network. We decide. And a lot of those financiers are on both sides. We're in the closed network that finances Democrats, and we're in the closed network that finances Republicans, which is how you get the bipartisan combi that John Cass has written about for so many years. But that's how the whole thing is a closed network. The political system is one big closed network. There's not electoral competition between Republicans and Democrats, and there never really has been. I mean, in the sense of it's going to be somebody from the closed network on either side, you know, back in the day when there was a perception of competition, that will continue to serve the closed network. I mean, what's the difference between George Ryan and Rod Blagojevich or J.B. Pritzker? Closed network. What's the difference? Why did Bill Cellini, you know, the famous impresario down in Springfield, another closed network guy, say infamously, when we win, we're in. When they win, we're in. We're always in. That's as big of a statement. That's a statement that everybody should know as well as they know Milton Rakoff's "We Don't Want Nobody, Nobody Sent." When we win, we're in. When they win, we're in. We're always in. Closed network. So you can, you know, break in, or you can operate outside the closed network and still survive, and even thrive. Some do. But in terms of an overall culture, it is a completely destructive one. Forget about the greenies and their degrowth agenda. Chicago's closed network is a degrowth agenda. It's just feudalism. And the feudal lords get rich, and most everybody else lives as a serf, if you stay. Paul in New Lenox, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hi, guys. Great show again. I just wanted to comment on the closed network. Did that keep out the Star Wars Museum, which could have generated all kinds of revenue and millions of dollars, and instead, you know, put the Obama Library in, which doesn't really generate anything? Is that part of the decision-making process?
You know, thanks for the call. I mean, I don't, you know, Melody Hobson, George Lucas's girlfriend or wife.
No,
now,
wife,
right?
No. Yeah, they got married at the promissory. They closed down a Chicago Park District area.
Wonderful. Yeah. Sorry, I wasn't invited. Not part of the closed network. You know, so she's on the inside, obviously, Ariel Capital and all that. Head of the, she was the president, Economic Club, Democrat, you know, Obama, all that. But, you know, I mean, that's somebody, I don't know if that's a closed network forcing out. I think it's just maybe higher, better use kind of thing. So, I mean, in a sense, it's a closed network because, you know, there's no real respect for ideas that don't serve the closed network. And maybe that the Lucas Museum just didn't have enough of a payoff for the insiders. I mean, I would think that, you know, you get Friends of the Park and Bespoiling the Lakefront. But we'll see if the closed network defers to Friends of the Park or these other sort of environmental Daniel Burnham acolytes when it comes to a Bear Stadium. I bet you they don't any more than they did the Obama Library or Obama Land. Matt, Birmingham, Alabama.
Hi, we're looking to move from Itasca. I run an outdoor power equipment company, and I've been searching from Birmingham to Greenville, Spartanburg, Charleston, Savannah. Just to give you an idea, the Port of Charleston alone, if we bring in our containers there, we bring in about 1,200 to 1,400 containers a year. We get a $240 tax credit towards payroll taxes that never goes away, provided we bring in more containers every year. So the first year alone, we not only save $202.5 million in freight, but we'd save $546,000 a year in payroll taxes.
Wow.
And it's amazing, just things like that. They're ready for people to come down. They're ready for people to work. Charleston alone has over 500 people a month moving down to that area permanently. And it's just a pro-growth area. They're just like, let's get it done, as opposed to Illinois, where we're literally just scraping and banging our head against a wall every time we turn around.
And how much money do you have to donate to Governor McMaster, to the Republican Party, to the local Pauls? How many alder humans do you have to meet with, state legislators? How many jobs do you have to set aside for the political class?
Exactly. I've only met with the city council of Bessemer, Alabama, and talked to them about tax and growth incentives to get us down there, and that's it. Other than that, 0.00.
Yeah, right. Not a closed network. Thanks for the call, Matt. And I'm not saying Chicago's the only one in the country. Obviously, that's not true. And politics being what it is, there's going to be stick-up artists all over the country. But, I go back to, I think I've shared this little anecdote before, but I remember talking several years ago, maybe around the time that Carter wrote that piece about Amazon, the Amazon warehouses or distribution centers, talking to a guy who was like a senior level sales guy for a big manufacturing concern. I think it was Steel, and he operated in, 18 states was his territory. And he said, I'll tell you, and he's not from Chicago. He said, I'll tell you what about Chicago. It's nice to get an outsider perspective, somebody who lives in, generally speaking, not a closed network. He said, God, everything here is politics. Mm-hmm. I talk more about politics. I have to consider more politics here than I do in all of my other states combined. Right. Of course you do. You got to get cleared. You got to get cleared to do business in Chicago. Ron in Sycamore.
Hi, Dan. Hi, Amy. I am part of a small person business. I started a financial literacy company called Boodle, and I'm a former CPS student. I presented my company. The schools that I was able to get into loved it, but the the system eventually kicked me out, and I am not coming back to CPS. They don't care about students. They don't want to educate them financially, and nobody cares.
Hmm. Yeah, you have it to be an approved contractor, right? So,
yep.
They didn't let you into their little circle?
When the pandemic hit, mm-hmm. I was shut out for about a year and a half, and I had to get reapproval. I've had two FBI background checks, all types of things. But no, CPS does not want me. They don't want those students educated financially.
Yeah. Or they have somebody else in mind to do it that's got more clout than you do.
Yeah.
Thanks for the call, Ron. Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer.
The big stories of the day. Then talk about them right here on Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. Only the biggest stories, only the biggest guests, and only the biggest opinions. This is AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. The arrogance of the New York Times and the D.C. press corps generally is just boundless. This piece on Guyana, South America, borders Venezuela to the west, has been a rumored target of Maduro as he destroys his country because of Guyana's oil fields. The New York Times piece, is Guyana's oil a blessing or a curse? Because what the New York Times wants for Guyana is to be the sort of noble victims of centuries of colonial rule, first the Dutch and the British, heroically preserving the Amazon rainforest without giving in to the modern world and to developing and to becoming self-sufficient, because that entails the use of fossil fuels and exacerbating the climate change problem. They want mascots. They don't want independent people, not in America and not in foreign lands. Well, the president of Guyana, Mohamed Irfan Ali, has a different perspective. And it came through fairly loud and clear in an interview with some eco-freak flack for the BBC, who was essentially touting the AOC Greta Thunberg line when it comes to developing the oil sector in Guyana for the benefit of its people. Take a listen.
Let's take a big picture look at what's going on here. Over the next decade, two decades, it is expected that there will be $150 billion worth of oil and gas extracted off your coast. It's an extraordinary figure. But think of it in practical terms. That means, according to many experts, more than 2 billion tons of carbon emissions will come from your seabed, from those reserves, and be released into the atmosphere. I don't know if you, as a head of state, went to the COP in Dubai.
Let me stop you right there. Do you know that Guyana has a forest forever that is the size of England and Scotland combined? A forest that stores 19.5 gigatons of carbon, a forest that we have kept alive, a forest that we have kept alive.
Does that give you the right?
That give you the right to lecture us on climate change? I am going to lecture you on climate change, because we have kept this forest alive that stores 19.5 gigatons of carbon that you enjoy, that the world enjoy, that you don't pay us for, that you don't value, that you don't see a value in, that the people of Guyana has kept alive. Guess what? We have the lowest deforestation rate in the world. And guess what? Even with our greatest exploration of the oil and gas resource we have now, we will still be net zero. Guyana will still be net zero. With all our exploration, we'll still be net zero.
Powerful words, Mr. President.
I'm not completed as yet. I am not finished as yet. I am just not finished as yet, because this is the hypocrisy that exists in the world. The world in the last 50 years has lost 65% of all its biodiversity. We have kept our biodiversity. Are you valuing it? Are you ready to pay for it? When is the developed world going to pay for it? Or are you in the pockets? Are you in the pockets of those who have damaged the environment? Are you in the pockets? Are you and your system in the pockets of those who destroyed the environment through the Industrial Revolution and now lecturing us? Are you in their pockets? Are you paid by them? Are you
No, they're paid by the rent-seeking green sector that's being underwritten by Western governments. But otherwise, other than his riff at the end about the Industrial Revolution, like it was a bad thing, I appreciate not allowing himself and his country to be infantilized from some dandy from across the pond. Well done, Mr. President. Jonathan Lesser joins us now. He's a senior fellow at the National Center for Energy Analytics. Jonathan, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
It's about time that we had some heads of state in the developing world or in the industrialized world or somewhere in between start to provide chapter and verse to the West like President Ali did, don't you think?
Yeah, it's interesting to hear him speak. And like you say, I think the riff about Industrial Revolution was a little off base. But other than that, you have a BBC reporter who's very arrogant, who fails to consider that what the developing world wants is to be developed. They want a standard of living that's like ours. And what we take for granted, healthcare, electricity supplies, travel, shelter, a lot of that's lacking. And you know, they rightly want all of that for themselves, too. And we seem to be in this phase of trying to basically keep them poor and miserable, and then making ourselves more miserable as well. At least that's what the goal for some of these people is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, shared misery. That's the big vision coming out of the West, generally speaking. And you and Mark Mills write about this with respect to our energy sector, and specifically this EPA mandate that sort of backdoors a transformation of the auto industry in this country by, you know, 2032 to EVs.
Well, that's correct. And in fact, the EPA on Good Friday, just last Friday, released a rule about heavy trucks, the large trucks that keep this country going, transporting goods, you know, all across the country. And they want to make electric trucks the rule. And, you know, right now there's no one even manufactures these trucks in the West. The only one who's manufacturing some of them is China. And you know, the problem is the electric grid is teetering on the edge of failure already, as we shut down coal plants, shut down natural gas plants, and try to replace it with intermittent wind and solar. You know, so what we pointed out was, even if you ignore the problem of electricity supplies being insufficient to electrify all cars and most everything else, what you have is the infrastructure, just building the new transmission lines, finding the transformers. A utility, it'll take years to order a large transformer. We're going to need thousands upon thousands of these. We'll need millions of distribution transformers. Those are the ones that look like little canisters on top of electricity poles running down your neighborhood street. We'll need millions of them. We'll need materials for all that. And it's just not going to happen. Given the rate we do things now, none of this is going to happen.
And then... like the individual level, I mean, millions of homes, apartment complexes, they're going to need electrical upgrades to accommodate all this.
That's true. That's absolutely true. And so you're going to need a lot more electricians, and utilities are going to need more linemen to install all this stuff. And you know, utilities are already desperate for linemen because the number of people is shrinking. The average age of the workforce is going up. So the labor that's going to be required is not there, and it's not something you can't just have somebody an apron and say go work on high voltage transmission lines. They won't last very long.
Although the good news is there was a piece, I think it was in the Journal, about an increasing number of people, young people going into the trades as opposed to college, with the increase in vocational offerings and so forth, and the path towards making money as opposed to piling up debt. So, you know, maybe on the workforce side, it's a possibility, but that still doesn't cure the overall vision problem that the central planners have with respect to our grid, does it?
No, it does not. And right now, our grid simply cannot handle it. The grid operators are warning the feds that this cannot, they can't handle it. We're going to have massive blackouts at the worst possible times, you know, in the middle of winter. You know, imagine a day in Chicago where the temperature is below zero, there's no wind and sunshine, and the power's out.
Yep.
That'll have a real impact. That's going to result in the deaths of many people.
Something else, too, about this that I hadn't really considered, but Alyssa Finley had a good column on it, about how the move to a green energy grid makes the U.S. more vulnerable to cyber attacks. She writes, so-called distributed energy systems provide an increasing number of entry points to the grid. An academic study last November modeled a case in which a remote attacker commandeered public EV chargers to create electric frequency distortions that led to a system-wide blackout in Manhattan. Such attacks will become feasible by 2030 with increased EV adoption, the authors of the study warn. And you're talking about Biden wanting to install 5,000 public EV chargers by 2030. Finley writes, that's 500,000 potential bots America's enemies could turn into weapons to take down the grid. So the grid failure on its own because of overload, the grid failure, the grid being vulnerable to cyber attacks that can compromise our national security.
That's right. And that's another issue. We didn't, you know, obviously discuss that in our article. But, yeah, you've got a national security issue as well. We're relying on China for most of these supplies of minerals that you need for this grid and for all the batteries and the EVs. Almost all of it comes from China. And, you know, that's certainly a national security issue on top of the cyber attack issue. But, you know, either no one is thinking about this at the government level, or they are thinking about it and they don't care. And one of the things we mention is, you know, one way to reduce the demand for electricity from all the EVs are going to mandate is just not let you charge them when you want.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll just enforce limitations on when you can charge your vehicle, when you can have power.
Well, right. I mean, as they're doing with home appliances, in addition to cars, too. Right. I mean, they're off in every which direction to regulate your access to the sort of energy that you enjoy to live a life you enjoy.
Well, that's right. More utilities are installing, you know, meters that essentially let them shut your power off. Now, you know, some people think, you know, they get a credit on their bill, and some people obviously think that's worth it. That's fine. But when it becomes mandatory, which it's likely to become, you know, then you've got essentially, you know, centralized control of what you can do. Where can you travel? Can you heat your home, cool your home? And that's, you know, is that the kind of society you really want to have, or do you want to have an unfettered society where basically you can do what you want when you want?
It seems like a
lot of people in our government don't want that.
I mean, the other piece of it, too, which you were hinting at, is the price tag. I remember this exchange between Senator John Kennedy from Louisiana and the number two guy at EPA from last year where, you know, you want $50 trillion. Well, for what? What are you going to do with it? No idea. And it's, you know, nice round numbers, as always. Who is it? The central planners. We have 50 trillion. I mean, why make it 100 trillion? Make it 200 trillion. Why not? If we're just having fun with numbers and printing money. So you have a country that's $35 trillion in debt. that's suffering from, I mean, double-digit inflation in terms of how people actually live their lives over the last 3 years, and seeing household income not keeping up with household expenses. And that doesn't even include $100 trillion plus in unfunded liabilities. And we're going to spend $50 trillion over 5 years to transform the economy. It's going to go off without a hitch. Everything will be delivered on time and under budget, and we'll have a brave new world. Sure.
Well, yeah, that's you've described it very well. You know, we can't afford this. And the thing about it, it's all being driven, obviously, by climate change. And yet, like you mentioned before you had me on, the emissions reductions, for example, the EPA's estimate of emissions reductions from the large truck rule between 2027 and 2055, so roughly 30 years, will be about a billion metric tons of carbon. And wow, that sounds like a huge number, except it's less than what the increase in China's emissions last year. It's about the equivalent of less than 1 week's worth of world emissions in 2022. And those emissions just keep going up and up. So nothing we do will have any impact on climate change at all. It won't even be measurable. So we're going to spend trillions of dollars that we don't have to accomplish absolutely nothing except probably enrich politically connected people. And that is driving this whole madness for green energy.
Jonathan Lesser, senior fellow at the National Center for Energy Analytics. Jonathan, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you, and he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
You're listening to Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.